Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline from the Seattle Times, it's Ryan Divish. Ryan, how's it going?
Good. I'm at Scenic Cheney Stadium here in Tacoma. About a half mile from my house, thought I'd swing over here and see Kyle Lewis play some baseball.
Solid start to the day. How's Kyle Lewis been looking, by the way? I think Curtis mentioned that he might have been injured or banged up just a bit yesterday. Is there nothing to worry about there?
Yeah, he's in the lineup again today as designated hitter. The game starts about a half hour. But, yeah, I think, you know, they're just going to be ultra careful. Any day that he's sore or you know, not feeling it, they're not going to send him out there, you know, but that's the point though of this rehab and why it's going to take all 20 days. He's got to get to the point where it's not about that. Like, you know, as they call it, that you can post, you know, you have to be able to post when you're needed to play more often than not, you can post, you know, obviously they give days off to guys and guys get dinged up and guys get hurt, but there's a reliability factor that needs to happen before he comes back. You know, and really they're sticking true to it because they need offense in the worst way so badly right now, and he's still here playing.
Well, and that's Ryan, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, a lot of people would be looking at it and saying, well, why are we waiting till the end of the month? The problem could be out of control by the time, just based off the way things are going at the moment, that you need somebody like Kyle Lewis to come up ASAP. But you're saying, hey, pump the brakes on that. There's a reason for this process.
Yeah, I think, honestly, that you'll probably see him coming off of the – once they come back off his next road trip, which is going to be a pretty difficult one, maybe you'll see him then. I can't remember when he gets 20 days. So I think that's when you're going to see him. Part of it is, too, is just like the timing of it all. He didn't take live at-bats during spring training at all. You know, he was basically limited in spring training. He wasn't doing a whole lot. And so, you know, he's got to get his timing back, get some games, just kind of get up to game speed. You know, I don't think he's facing the best pitchers in the world here in Tacoma, but I know he does need to kind of get that kind of timing back. So, I mean, as soon as it's up, I think they're going to bring him up. You know, I don't think we'll see him play outfield a ton, but, you know, I think it's still tracking in the right direction at least.
Mariners dropped yesterday's game to the Phillies. 17 hits for the Phillies. Gross. 9 runs. Not a great outing. Offensively, they've been struggling. Ryan, you've covered this team for a long time. You know what slumps feel like, and then you know what bad teams feel like. Does this feel like a bad slump for a promising team, or does it feel like they've got some real important pieces missing?
I mean, I kind of think it's just an average team regressing. I don't know that they're a good team on paper. Mm-hmm. When fully healthy, they could be a decent to good team. But they're not fully healthy, and they don't look to be fully healthy anytime soon. They're just not getting to production that they need. I mean, a year ago we talked about how it was only Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager and Ty France, because this is before JP really got going last year.
Right.
It was Mitch Haniger, Ty France, and Kyle Seager providing all the run support and all the production. I mean, now it's basically kind of Ty France and a 21-year-old kid in his first year trying to carry the offense. You know, Jesse Winker has not been good. And, you know, Suarez has been kind of what expected, but even a little streakier than they want. And so they've got to figure out a way to get better production up and down the lineup than what they've been getting right now.
Related to that, Ryan, is your understanding and – obviously, you're limited in everything you can say because you've had a lot of conversations behind the scenes. But is your understanding of this team that they wanted to add more in the offseason and didn't or couldn't, or that they felt like they had a good group heading into the season and did exactly what they wanted?
I think it was a couldn't in the sense that I don't think that a lot of these free agents wanted to sign with them.
Yeah.
Honestly, like even money for Trevor Story, who has been terrible, he was going to go to Boston for various reasons. I mean, like we've had kind of conversation with Larry Stone on our podcast a little bit, just in general, you know, you're sitting in the press box, but you know, this team hasn't won in 21 years. They have not been to the postseason in 21 years. That's a problem. You factor in the travel, the location. That's a problem. You know, perceptions of Seattle as a city. It's a problem. you know, reputation of the organization in general, whether it's the Poto or other things, that's a problem. So you throw all that in there, and it, again, it's just not necessarily the most attractive place to go as a free agent. You've got to pay probably 20% more over market value. Now, are they willing to do that? They should be. I think they know that. I mean, I think a lot of people felt like they paid more than what Robbie Ray was probably going to get from other places. So I think they're willing to do that, but I just don't think that they were able to kind of execute, or I think they found it more difficult to attract free agents than they thought it was going to be. Mm. And then even like the trades, I know they had a trade for Matt Chapman in the works, and they felt like they had a better package of return than what Toronto gave up. But at the same time, the A's were trading within the division, and they were always going to ask a little bit more. Same with Frankie Montas. So I think that's what they've run into, is that like maybe adding the pieces to the roster was even more difficult than they expected. And I think they knew it wasn't going to be easy. So that's what they've run into.
Well, Ryan, it does make you wonder, when is that cycle going to end? Is it going to end at any time soon? Yeah. Because you could add it to any year, right? It just seems like, man, this is going to be a perpetual problem for them. You know, one of the things that I also have looked at, you mentioned Winker not living up to the billing of what this organization thought he could be or would be. Having Haniger out makes that problem 10 times worse. But also, it just seems like there was very much a premium on flexibility. Flexibility for multiple reasons, whether that's the lineup changes, whether that's, you know, the amount of money that they put on their payroll so that they can maneuver in different spots however they saw fit. Is that desire for flexibility one of the reasons why they're in the position that they are in today?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, yeah, you know, talking with some scouts and stuff, kind of the love affair with Abraham Toro and some other players that maybe the Mariners value more than other teams value. You know, I mean, I think we all know that when you're having to play Abraham Toro daily basis or Dylan Moore on a daily basis, that's not kind of what you want. That's not what you designed this team to be. You know, it's nice that they can play a lot of different positions, but you also need guys that are just good. You know, the talent level right now is an issue, and they just don't, you know, with those guys out, it's just not a team. It was kind of funny. I know when I was talking to Mitch Haniger this spring, just kind of talked to him on the field, and he asked me what their payroll was and what they're spending on players. And he said at one point, he says, you know, if something happens and Ty or me or one of these guys gets hurt, we're just not deep enough to withstand it. He goes, and we can't have two guys in our lineup be out for a very long period because we don't have enough depth, you know, to really offset that. And granted, a lot of MLB teams don't. But again, a lot of MLB teams aren't in the position where the Mariners are, where you're making postseason expectations and you have money to work with and you don't do something about it. I mean, and this can go back to even last year. Like, we've talked about it before on the show where, you know, a year ago, if they go out and do some stuff and they aren't just kind of, as you know, waiting for free agents to be hat in hand, you have Colton Wong on your team playing second base, who's got a 390 or almost 400 on base percentage and is a gold glover. You know, you don't have to make these other moves. So I think, like, it's always a combination of things. You know, like this offseason hasn't gone the way they planned. Winker and Suarez haven't exactly been what they wanted yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it also goes back to they didn't do last year. Like, you can continually add and get better without always having to go for it or rebuild. You can have a little bit of a middle in-between area sometimes. I mean, and I think that's one thing I've always kind of said about the Mariners is, like, look, they want to win. I know they want to win, but there's a commitment to, like, how you want to win that takes a little bit of courage in the sense that you've got to risk something, you know. You have to put some risk in these goals, and that if that means paying more than you want, then maybe that's what you have to do.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe a risk they're unwilling to take is trading away some of those prospects that they have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they really wanted to trade. I don't think, you know, they've had a lot of offers on Noel V. Marte, and they've had a lot of offers for, you know, obviously George Kirby. They were never trading George Kirby or Julio. But, you know, like, if you want to go get Brian Reynolds of the Pirates to, you know, fill out that outfield, then you have to give up players. You know, if you want to get Frankie Montas, you're going to have to give up more than you want. It's going to be uncomfortable. But that's the thing, is like, committing to win and getting to the point where you are winning, there is some level of discomfort because it is a risk. And you're investing in something that is an unknown. But that's what you have to do. I mean, like, I don't think it was comfortable for the Dodgers initially those years when they signed Trevor Bauer. I think they knew he was a loathsome human being, but they did it because they thought that was going to push them over the top. Then they have to go give up prospects to get Matt Scherzer because Trevor Bauer is suspended. Like, they, you have to do that sometimes. If your expectation is to win, then you have to go out of the comfort zone of what you feel is normal to do what you think is necessary to get there. And I don't know that the Mariners have always done that. And it's not necessarily an indictment on Jerry DePoto or even Jack Cerenzik. Sometimes oftentimes I think it comes from the top level that they have to commit, you know, and it's not just on John Stanton. He has minority owners too, that have a say in this. So you commit, you want to be good, or, you know, you can be middle of the road and hope.
I was just going to ask where that maybe risk aversion or fear of commitment to taking a risk comes from. You think it's just kind of shared near the top?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, you know, that, I mean, honestly, to be honest, the reason Kevin Mather stayed as Mariners president for as long as he did before the Zoom issues is because he made them money. They made money in the years where they were bad. They made money. They knew how to make money. And so you don't usually get rid of somebody that's making you money on it. And I think that's the problem too, though. I mean, like, look at this past weekend. It was cold as hell there every night. And they had 30,000. They had 30,000 twice. You know, that's massive dollars. You look at all these things that they're doing from a business side. Yeah, even on the nights when they only get 7,000, they're still doing very well. You know, and you also have to look at they own their own regional sports network. So all the dollars in that they're making, you know, they're getting that. I mean, like, it's not, you know, it's revenue shared with the dollars you make off of TV. But again, it's still money that they're not paying out to a network. They're doing it themselves. So I just think, like, you know, they have to commit to something. You know, they've talked about expectations and you know, wanting to get set certain goals. And I think the players have done that. They've done that. You know, they have to perform. But again, as an organization, there has to be a level of, okay, we're setting this as the standard. And if we don't get there, then we have to do something and make sure we fix it. And I don't know that that's the standard or the level of personal organizational accountability that they've set. I mean, granted, the last few years they've been rebuilding, but now you've set the standard. You've come out and said, we're going to spend, we're going to win, we want to do this. Then they have to show it. And it can't just be, oh, well, the players aren't performing. At some point, you have to give the players the tools to perform. And I don't know that they've done that this year.
Well, I think something that you bring up that's incredibly important is you talk about accountability to course correct. And right now, in your estimation, do you feel like the Seattle Mariners are going to sit back and say, we've got to see these players, you know, change their trajectory and how they're playing Jesse Winker? You got to change the trajectory and how you're playing Jared Kelnick versus them going out and being aggressive enough to course correct with a trade of some kind or an addition of some kind that can help this team that is floundering a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what they can do, because usually the trade market for, like, premium players isn't really heavy this time of year. You know, it really doesn't heat up till about June, end of June. So, like, I don't know that they can go out and trade for help right now, and I don't know how many teams are willing to trade. You know, and I know it's early, and they talk about the first 40 games, and every team loses 50, and every team wins 50, or loses 60 and wins 60, and how you do the rest. But they're trending in the wrong direction, and there isn't, with the exception of Kyle Lewis, there isn't help coming right now. We don't know how long Tom Murphy's going to be out. You know, and I'm working on something, but, you know, Mitch Haniger, it's possible that he's out 12 weeks total. You know, this, the high ankle sprain, it was sprained bad enough. When I talked to him, it was sprained bad enough that it's bone bruised on the side, on the high level of you just don't get back from that. And we've seen how much torque that Mitch puts on his body when he swings and how hard he goes. I just don't know how long that's going to take to get him back. You know, he's still in a walking boot. Typical for a grade two, between a grade two and a grade three sprain is 12 weeks, you know, and to play at maximum levels, that could be that long. I mean, 12 weeks without Mitch Haniger is a long time, you know, and where are they going to get the offensive production from? We haven't, you know, Kelnick's shown it in bits and pieces. Winker's shown it in bits and pieces, but they can't go with flashes and glimpses. They need sustained production. You know, it's nice that Winker gets on base, and it's good that Kelnick has great at bats, but, you know, at some point you have to deliver. You have to hit with runners in scoring position. You have to be that run producer. Say what you want about Kyle Seager last year, and his batting average wasn't great at times, but he drove in a lot of runs, and when runners were on base, he did well with runners in scoring position, whether it was a sac fly or just a ground ball is short if you need to. They're not executing with runners in scoring position, and you can kind of see the lack of offense is starting to wear on. They're getting way too aggressive in counts and really not getting back to what they were doing. But at the same time, yeah, it's great to take a bunch of walks and get a lot of guys on base, but it wears on a team when they don't drive them in and they let them stand it out there.
He is Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. Make sure you are reading his work at seattletimes.com and go subscribe to the Extra Innings podcast. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah. All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
All right, first down. According to John Schneider, who spoke with Wyman and Bob yesterday, what was the reason the Seahawks received high praise from outside for their draft?
Well, John Schneider, I think, you know, put it out in a very simple way in terms of why he felt like they got rave reviews overall here in cut number 10.
Yeah, well, I'd be lying to you if I told you I didn't pay attention to it, right? Like, what'd you get on your report card? What'd you get on the test, right?
But, yeah.
People may have felt that way just because they knew the names, maybe. We didn't push guys. We did a good job of staying disciplined in that regard. Sometimes you can push guys based on need. I think we kind of just stayed, and we didn't move around a ton, too. So, you know, guys' names were coming up, and every time, you know, every time we were getting ready to pick, we were kind of sweating it out, waiting for a guy to get there. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily, I think it just kind of came off the way that the draft in itself, you know, if you look at the first, you know, 10 picks as well. So it just kind of came off the way it was, you know, supposed to, or like the way the media thought it would.
So names that everybody recognizes. Now, I don't know if that's totally true, but I do believe that when you're talking about, you know, what they did, that was, there wasn't a whole lot of movement to his point. It was very direct and very purposeful. That to me is the reason why they got a great grade. It was very direct, very purposeful. They came in with a mission. It was very clear as to what they wanted to accomplish, and they were able to get it done. Some of the other reasons why they got a good draft grade is because they actually got good value with a lot of their picks. I mean, you look at Charles Cross in the right range. You look at Abraham Lucas. You actually got him for better value than what people thought he was going to go for. Boye Mafe, same thing. You look at Kobe Bryant. You look at Tyreek Wolin, Bo Melton. All these picks were value picks, and so that is why they're walking away with a good draft grade, and I think that people should be very excited about the possibilities of what could be in terms of the potential foundation that could be set and laid for this team.
Second down. What role does Steve Hutchinson have in the Seahawks organization that makes you jealous?
Oh, man. I mean, listen to this job description for Steve Hutchinson. I'm going to explain to you what this means. Let's go cut number 11 here.
Steve travels all around the country doing offensive line. He loves it. And, you know, he was working in the personnel department for the Titans, and it was just, you know, too much time away from his family. So, you know, he just felt like, hey, you know, maybe I can work with another club. And we had talked to him several times. He's close with Matt Berry as well. And, you know, so he basically travels around the country doing offensive linemen and studying them and getting to know the coaches and learning as much as he can about it.
So Steve Hutchinson, instead of, you know, as he was talking about with his family, John Schneider working with the Titans, that, hey, he was part of the personnel department. When you're part of the personnel department, you're part of the scouts, and you are an area scout, so to speak, you cover everyone. You look at everybody, every single position. You are traveling everywhere, and that is a ton of work. That is a daunting task. Well, Steve Hutchinson, obviously being an amazing offensive lineman, being a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, one of the greatest offensive linemen in franchise history here in Seattle, John Schneider and crew have hired him to essentially look at only offensive linemen. His job is to look at the offensive linemen in, you know, in the draft and the prospects, and go around the country and study these offensive linemen, connect with coaches, and just become a savant of the position. Oh my gosh. If there was a opportunity to do that for a quarterback perspective, that would be like the dream of all dreams that I would have. Is just, hey, your only job, just focus on quarterbacks. Just focus on scouting quarterbacks every single year, the next couple of years. Connect with all the coaches around the country. Really get a good feel and a good beat on who these guys are. I mean, that would be such a cool gig. And Steve Hutchinson obviously is very deserving of that opportunity and a very, very good person to have in charge of the offensive line. And guess what? Steve Hutchinson and the rest of the staff and everybody else involved with personnel did a very good job in selecting the right offensive lineman to lay the foundation for these bookend tackles in Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas. Really cool.
Third down. How confident are you the Seahawks will at some point pursue Baker Mayfield?
Via trade, 0% chance.
Okay.
Via free agency after being cut, 100% chance. That's how I feel. That is the disparity between the two. There is no way, no how, the Seahawks are going to be anywhere close to being interested in trading for Baker Mayfield. They don't need to. There's no reason why they should be, you know, pressing and trying to trade for Baker Mayfield. Even taking half of the salary doesn't make any sense for them to go out and try to do that. But if Baker Mayfield's cut, he's on the open market, and they can compete for his services, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that Baker Mayfield, if he's looking at the landscape right, the situation here in Seattle should be infinitely more attractive than the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Carolina Panthers or whoever else would be vying for his services. I think the Seattle Seahawks would be the exact right place for him, and I think the Seahawks should 100% be in on that situation if it did present itself. So two different mindsets for the Seahawks when it comes to Baker Mayfield. No way they trade for him, but if he becomes on the open market, you better believe that they will crank it up and they will definitely be aggressive in their pursuit of him.
Fourth down. Jake, this one's actually really easy because we gotta go anyway. We're going to get to the timeline. It's really just a one-word answer. On your pursuit of quarterbacks as a quarterback savant, were you to take that Steve Hutchinson-esque role, you get to choose one of me or Curtis to be your sidekick.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, we have our quarterback camp. We both
You don't have
a lot.
To answer out loud because we know what the answer is going
to
be.
We know that the answer.
I'm just trying to understand what exactly do you bring to the table that
you
the reason why I should pick you. Interviewing you right now is what I'm doing.
Oh, me specifically.
Yeah, yes. You, Stacey.
Well, no, I mean, what's Curtis bring to the table?
Well, Jake already knows.
Which of us brings less to the table?
I'm interviewing you. Stacey, listen to me. I'm interviewing you first.
Okay, yeah, no problem. Social media presence. Not me. I mean, my training for players. What are you going to wear on the red carpet to draft day? All really important things. Number three,
mm-hmm.
What are people saying about this player, right? Let's go figure it out. Let's go talk to other people and figure out the hot, juicy gossip about the player.
Okay. So
number four, my 13-step drop back, which I am working on the patent for that.
Okay.
It's a work in progress, but the 13-step drop back is something that I think is okay. The future of the NFL.
This was a great interview.
Thank you
for your time. Curtis, is there anything that you have to say?
No.
No? Okay. Curtis is hired.
All what? Right, that's ridiculous. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. I'm appalled. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 in the Seattle Sports app. Don't go anywhere. Timeline's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey telling you the top trends and stories in sports you're going to hear about today. If you haven't heard about this one, it's a weird one, but I completely understand why it's trending. Marcelo, a player for Lyon, the first team, has been removed from the team permanently.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but why?
Well, that's the interesting part of it. He was dropped from the first team due to continuous farting and laughing in the dressing room.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, farts are always funny.
One does lead to the other.
So I guess that he, during one team captain's speech, he was caught laughing during the speech, which the manager obviously didn't love. And then he has also reportedly been disciplined. This is from ESPN. Marcelo has also been disciplined by the club for repeatedly farting amongst his teammates in the dressing room and laughing.
That team's head coach.
I mean,
has a stick up, you know where? Because
yeah, like what?
We all do it, buddy.
You. Now, the question is, all right, is this like, is this something where, you know, they're having like the coach is having this big speech and it's this big moment,
and
he's just
he's like, I'm trying to have a moment here, man. You're ruining it. Take anything serious.
Jake, right. Would Jackson or Bodie be allowed to play on this team?
Is this now Jackson and Bodie's favorite player?
Absolutely. Yes. Currently, right now. Currently, right now. Seriously, we have a potty talk problem going on in the Heaps household, and we are trying to cut it out. We have gotten to the point, I kid you not, where we are threatening to take away money from their piggy bank.
Uh-oh.
They cannot stop.
You can't take that back. No take back.
The fart jokes, the potty talk, it's just like out of control right now.
But farts are funny, Jake. What are they supposed to do about
Dad.
That?
They yeah. are, but you can't talk about it 24/7.
Do they ever make a joke to your guys' face and it's so hard for you and Brooke not to laugh?
100%. It is like you have to turn your head, like they say something to you, and you have to
like
turn
what?
Away from them.
What do they say where you're
and
like...
And regain your composure.
Yeah.
And you just... And then you got to be like, that's just not good. That's
What's
not
the
okay.
last insult that Jackson or Bodie said where you and Brooke had to compose yourselves before you said that's not okay?
Oh, man. Gosh, I don't know. It's one of those things where you'd have to be there in the moment with yeah. them, but... Bodie the other day, without fail, I don't even know if I could say this on the air, so I'm just not going to. It's just, it is prevalent right now, so this story is very, very real. And if this guy's a repeat offender, okay, I'll just say this. If he's a repeat offender, then they're like, that's it, it's the last straw, it's not funny anymore after the, you know, 10th time that you've done this, just like in my own household. But the first time, I mean... Got to give people some grace. I mean, it is pretty funny.
Well, that's the thing. It's like at a certain point, it got to like the fifth fart where they were like...
They're like, Marcello.
They were like, bro, this was funny the first time, the second time. You just keep doing it, man.
Monsieur. Out.
Jacques Bleu. Next story here in the timeline.
Oh, man.
The Pirates, congratulations. They got their first win by a starting pitcher in 2022. Yes, that is correct. They got their first win by a starting pitcher in the 2022 season in their 28th game on Monday, setting a new MLB record.
Oh, my gosh. That's
look,
insane.
Today, from a Mariners point of view, I would love to look down on someone, and I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I'm going to do it to the Pirates.
There aren't many we can look down on yeah. right now.
We're looking at you, Pirates, who have a one-game worse record than us. We're looking at you, Reds, who are an embarrassment and abomination Major League Baseball. That will be our goal, Stacey, is hopefully, eventually, there will be a lot more teams that we can look down on. But at the current moment, there are only so many. There's very few. And the Pittsburgh Pirates are one of them.
What was the... Do you guys remember offhand the record that Seattle had for... Was it just total players... being activated,
yeah,
or was it
used.
Pitchers?
Yes. No, it was, yeah, last year it was total players
used.
They had like
62 or something?
Yeah, last year it was 60-something players. That was absolutely insane.
I almost want to do like a trivia game where I just tell you the name of a player and you tell me whether or not he actually ever played for the Mariners.
And guess what? They won 91 games.
90 games.
They had 63 players. I saw a stat the other day, I think it was on the Mariners broadcast, that in... 1998, the first season with 30 teams, there was like 500-something pitchers used over the entirety of Major League Baseball that year. And already in the month of May, we've surpassed that number.
Is it because of spring training?
I think it's because of the specialization of relief pitchers.
Oh,
I think it's, you know, starting pitchers only going 4 or 5 innings, and now you're using relievers
more often
in your 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. And then you've also got, you know, the guys who were in for just a couple batters per inning.
Yeah. I would imagine it's weird for older pitchers to just be like, I'm sorry, you're a starter and you're pitching through 5.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see complete games anymore. Ever.
No. Not hardly ever. I mean, unless you're Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer.
Even
and
those
two guys are.
They're going to be like, I don't. It's.
Those two guys are crazy.
Yeah. Just the heat you're throwing is just, to be fair, like, guys aren't pitching complete games because pitchers are just different now.
Yeah. It's true. It's just a different mindset and mentality. That's all it is.
Do you think that there are, when I look at football, for instance, and people point to guys of the past, I'm like, look, those guys were obviously incredible athletes, but I do wonder how they'd match up against athletes today where the game is just bigger and faster and stronger and more physical.
Sure.
Do you think there's the equivalent of that for pitching, or do you think Nolan Ryan would come in and just...
Well, I think about this in terms of the romanticization of how good hitters actually were.
Oh, like when people get so mad when you say, Shohei, kind of like a Babe Ruth, and people are like, how dare you?
No, it's just like in the 90s, you know, 90s, 2000s, 80s, you look at those batting averages, and they were way, 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 way up. And yeah, in general, I do believe that there was a, of course, there was a different mentality. It's way more about playing the short game and being comfortable, you know, spraying the ball around. But also, if you had the analytics, they didn't do shifts. They didn't do shifts like they do today. If you had the analytics of today for back then and you were able to apply the shift the way that's done, I think that batting averages would be down as well for those other players. So I do think that it is skewed when people look at batting averages and everything else back then and say how great these guys were at hitting. Yes, they were. But I also think there's a lot of players. Kyle Seager, probably his batting average would have been a lot better if he could just pull it all day long.
All right, so that will do it for the timeline. We're going to get back to those cuts from John Schneider. So earlier we talked about the quarterback battle. He talked about some draft changes. This time, does KJ Wright have a role in Seattle? And what stood out to John from the rookies this past weekend? That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Robbie Ray and the Mariners take on the Phillies again today. First pitch at 6:40 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. As a reminder for you guys, we're going to go into John Schneider sound here, get a little NFL heavy, but we have the Dugout, an all-Mariner show coming up in the final hour of the day from 1 to 2 p.m. That leads off with the Scott Service show. So still lots coming your way, but I do want to get back to John Schneider because he did have a lot to say with Wyman and Bob the other day. So I'm going to start with, does KJ Wright have a role in Seattle?
Yeah, no, he's an amazing person. Both Pete and I met with him this off season, and you know, he's, you know, trying to figure some things out too, and as we are, but you know, it'd probably be in some sort of non-playing role. But to your point, yeah, what a person, right? High character guy.
I'd be curious to know what a non-football role for KJ Wright would be.
Well, it would be potentially as a coach if he is interested in that career path. I think that would be something that makes a lot of sense. I mean, just look at, you know, former players that are currently on the coaching staff. Austin Davis made a quick transition from being an offensive assistant to being the quarterback coach. You look at Deshaun Shedd right now in the secondary. Will Tukuwafu, who is currently on the staff. So I think that, yeah, there's definitely opportunities for somebody like KJ Wright if he wanted to go down that path. And there's other, you know, different various levels that you get into. Maybe it's something to do with, you know, I mean, the Seahawks have their own version of, you know, community outreach that they could do. There's different versions of, you know, player personnel roles that he could have. I mean, there's lots of things. They'll find a role. Whatever path that KJ Wright would like to have in the organization, they would certainly love to have him in the building because of who he is, what he has stood for them for, you know, 10 years and just being a total pro on and off the field. So if I were the Seahawks, I would be very open to having KJ Wright be a part of the organization. But, you know, that's completely up to him and what he wants to do.
All right, let's talk rookie minicamp. John, what did you see?
I have to say, there was a bunch of them. Obviously, you know, seeing the size of the two tackles and the quickness that they played with, and then, you know, seeing Ken Walker catching the ball, caught the ball really well this weekend. And you saw it in the workouts and everything, but in the game, they didn't throw it to him a ton in the fall.
This is something that Ken Walker mentioned, I believe, in his draft call, but also in his interview with us, which is that he feels like he's good coming out of the backfield as a pass catcher as well, and maybe didn't get an opportunity to do that a lot because we talked about transferring and kind of, you know, going from Wake Forest to a place where he felt the offense was a better fit. But even then, he didn't get to do a lot of it. And basically saying, like, look, I have good hands.
Yeah.
All but dancing around it and saying, I have good hands. I can catch the ball.
Right. Yeah, he did, and that would be a very positive development. So one of the other things that you have to equate into all of this when it comes to being a every down back is also pass protection, and that's an area where Ken Walker is going to have to continue to keep working at and improve and show that he can handle that, and that's a critical part of playing the position of running back is the protection. So if Ken Walker can, you know, really truly continue to show that he has got reliable hands and can be that dynamic playmaker, trust me, they will find a way to keep him on the field. And you know, the more you can do, the better it will be in the long term, you know, for this offense. And you talk about the stability. Well, now you don't need to get into, all right, who's going to be our third down back? Who's going to be the scat back? Who's going to play this role and that role? If you have somebody like Ken Walker who can do it all, I mean, man, that would be such a positive development for the organization on top of what they already have potentially with Rashad Penny if he can stay healthy.
Now, Schneider mentioned both tackles in that answer, but he elaborated more on the pick of Charles Cross at 9 overall.
It was confident in the process. You know, everybody was really excited about Charles. You know, the athlete, everybody, you know, talks about the pass protection. You can obviously see that. But the thing that really stood out with us was in the run game, a guy that can run his feet. Both these guys do it, Abe and Charles, right? They're just really good athletes, too. So to have that upside in the run game, especially with, Shane and Andy's system. So that was really exciting.
I think that's the one thing I'm really curious to see about with both of these tackles is they both come from systems in which they had to be great pass protectors. And honestly, like, I feel like I'm making it sound like that's a knock. Like, I would expect that tackles would be even better at pass pro and guards would be even better at run blocking. But, like, it's clear that Schneider and presumably Carroll also see these guys as being a great part of their specific offense.
Yes, 100%. And that is a great feeling to have, right? When you feel like you have found players that can be difference makers for you and that not only will they be able to do that and contribute at a high level from day one, but also be somebody that you can count on in terms of roster building over the next 4 or 5 years and you don't have to worry about filling that gap. That's a great feeling. That's a comforting feeling. And now you're not having to spend $10+ million on your left tackle like you were with Dwayne Brown. You've got Charles Cross. You don't have to worry about, you know, spending, you know, $5+ million on your right tackle or, you know, the really good tackles, $10+ million on both sides. You have guys that are on player friendly contracts that you can build around. And that is, you know, the hallmark of when a team is rebuilding and you're trying to put together an elite level roster, the more impact players that you can have on rookie deals at premium positions, the better off you can be.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Let me issue you guys a quick reminder. You can subscribe anytime to the Jake and Stacey podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast. If you do subscribe, which is just going to be a podcasted form of our show, please rate and review if you wouldn't mind. I have my own personal review goal, and I'm inching closer to it. So now the competition is rationing up for me. So if you guys do listen to us regularly, but, you know, maybe miss the occasional interview and want to go back and listen to that, make sure you subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. And again, we would really appreciate leaving a review. It would mean a ton to us. All right, coming up here, we've been doing the Jake and Stacey draft profiles all off season. We're doing a 2-for-1 next. Don't go anywhere.